Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
One Flesh by Mary Collier, read by Jean-Paul Garnier, with music by Luke Poole. One Flesh. The only viable industry left on Atlantis is a glorified auction block, and I'm one of those up for bid. Oh, there are still wealthy individuals here that can flit to the high places and afford the imported foods and clothes, but their servants are mostly robots. A lucky few real humans are employed as servants. There is nothing left on Atlantis but empty, collapsing buildings, dust blowing in from destroyed land, and foul-tasting water from the few sources left. Next to stand is Nadja Dillam, a sturdy young female that should be able to bear your children without artificial procedures. Someone behind me prodded my buttocks to make sure I walked briskly to the podium. The beautiful women had all been bid for and purchased. The action had been rapid. Most expected the pace of the bidding to slow, and some men and women had left the hall. I am not one of the beautiful ones. I am too tall, my eyes are too small, my shoulders too broad, my breasts are my own, and I have a straight up and down body with thick legs. It comes from growing up on the planet of Atlantis, the first one settled by pioneers from Earth. Earth beings in top physical condition had been a requisite for the colonist. My one good feature is a mane of thick, glossy black hair. At one time, Atlantis had been the richest planet in the galaxy. Ambitious males and females fled the planet as it waned. Anyone with half a credit or a degree still does. One of the resources Atlantis has left is an imbalance of females. To feed their extended families, poorer women like me voluntarily offer themselves to an interplanetary bonding house. The bonding contract will pay a lump sum to the family on Atlantis and provide security in one's own old age. The bondage can be beneficial or lead to a shortened life full of misery. A few are extremely fortunate. They are showered with luxuries undreamt of by Atlantis's standards. Every one of us harbored a what-if-it's-me thought. The bidding for me was not brisk, but two different mails opened. After the fifth raise, the auctioneer banged the bell and announced, "Sold to Bitten von Merg from Delmorf." My brain had difficulty realizing that he was possibly as wealthy as the early bidders. He would be able to provide for my mum and security for me. Delmorf is the financial powerhouse among the stars. My buyer was of medium male height, which meant we saw eye to eye. His hair was dark, as were his eyes, but his shoulders were round, and it seemed his bodysuit revealed strange lumps patterned on his torso and thighs, probably from sitting while arranging all those money deals, I thought. Well, so much for any chance of sexual satisfaction. The man would be more interested in financial accumulation. Once he paid the auctioneer, he took my hand in his and said, "Welcome into my life." Hand in hand, we walked to the outer chamber. There, the attendant handed me a soft green robe with a satin-like sash and a pair of metallic green stretch shoes. "I decided on a free-flowing cover until we purchase your new clothes. It's rather inadequate, but it is serviceable. If you feel you wish to wear what you once owned, I'll understand." His voice was a decent tenor. The feel of the material was incredible, soft, rich, supple beyond belief. Compared to the clothing I wore this morning, it was light years beyond in quality. "Thank you, these are lovely." I quickly belted the robe around me. Not that I'm overly modest, you understand, but it was a tad cool in here. The shoes slipped onto my feet as though melded there, and they were soft, oh, so wonderfully soft. I floated into the bonding chamber. "Welcome, Mr. von Merg." The dark-suited man at the desk looked like he was choking from the tightly rolled collar around his neck. He eyed my height with disdain. "I'm surprised. Your deposit entitled you to one of the first sold. This suits my idea of a perfect body structure." That took my breath away. My shoulders were as broad as his. Signing the contracts took about one half an hour, and Rold Collar performed the brief allegiance ceremony. I learned Delmorphs tend to be old-fashioned. Bit selected the wordings from an ancient Earth wedding ceremony. The words, "Until death do us part," need to be changed, Bit insisted. Instead of "Until death do us part," I found myself intoning, "We shall be one flesh." Then we signed more papers. The amount to be paid to my mother was less than my purchase price, but I had the satisfaction of seeing my mother's worn face appear with tears streaming down her cheeks when she was informed of the amount deposited in her name. "Will you regret leaving her, my dear?" "Yes and no, Mr. Von Merg. Please, address me as Bit." He did not wait for an answer, but took my hand and led me out to the waiting area. There he gave a triangular piece of metal or plastic to the attendant. Within minutes, a flivver was at the station, and we were whisked to his rooms high above the gray, cloaked, broken city streets. The landing area was part of his suite. "Here we are, my dear. What do you think of your new quarters?" His voice was full of anticipation. I had to grab his arm for support. How do I describe carpets that are soft and glowing with colors? Would anyone believe me if I told them of four huge chairs, a long couch with a back, soft, glossy cushions, and rows of softly humming machines? There was a rich, deep brown table by the window with four maroon comfort chairs set around it, a beautiful centerpiece of flowers in a vase that looked like real glass, artwork from other planets emblazoned the walls with colors, and there were more rooms beyond this one. "I believe I should order you some new clothes before we begin our celebration. What size do you wear?" The question left me blank. I never knew clothes came in sizes. We always wore whatever we could find. If it was too large, belt it up, roll up the legs and waist, or cut them off if too long. I don't know. Very well. He brought a screen to life. "Coordinator, would you send up some female attire for someone? Oh, let's say about 6 feet tall, slender, unknown size. Is that possible?" "For you, Mr. Von Merg, anything. Do you have a color preference?" Bit regarded me. "Oh, I should think any color but yellow will suffice. Tomorrow I'll expect a fashion courtier with a mini boutique, but not this evening. Also, send up the dinner I ordered earlier, but for two." He blanked out the screen. "See how easy that is, my dear? Let's do a tour of these rooms, and then you may freshen up and I'll contact a few places before dinner arrives. After that, the evening is ours." I had to be in a fantasy world. Unlike my former life, everything was plush. The bathroom is larger than my mother's allotted space, and everything is so clean. Bit showed me how to operate the buttons for the water and soap, where the lotions were, and left me alone. I took a very deep breath and cautiously stuck a foot into the sunken bath. The water was warm. Step by step, I entered the water and lowered myself. Once there, I closed my eyes and snapped them open. Everything was still there. This was not a fantasy. My body was wet, the sides of the tub real, the soap smelled heavenly, and everything was at my disposal. When I finally walked back into the room, the dinner was there and Bit was still at the screen, his face intent while his fingers touched the circles so rapidly they were blurring. He must have seen my reflection, for he turned his head slightly, nodded, and spoke in a low tone. "Clinch that price, Jarnell, and sell the instruments to the Deccas." He turned to me. "Lovely, my dear, you no longer smell of disinfectant. I didn't want to distress you, but it does have an odor." Dinner was a revelation. One bite and I knew this was real meat, not the protein paste that was distributed twice a month at the feeding stations. There were real vegetables. The dessert was real passion fruit, with some type of syrup. The wine must have been real, too. There was no vinegary taste, and I drank three glasses. "That was wonderful," I said and giggled. "What was wrong with me?" Bit smiled. "The busser will be here to clear this away. Come." And he led me by the hand into the bedroom and closed the door. "We won't need to worry about interruptions." Later, I learned you call the servants by pressing a circle on the dinner tray. Well-trained ones know exactly why and what to do. He left the light on. It adds to the pleasure, you know. "Well, no, I didn't. But why argue with someone that owns you?" He began by disrobing me, running his hands down my arms and sides. Then he began shedding his clothes. Delmorph clothing tends towards full sleeves, tight tubes around the body, and trousers that balloon below the knee. Bit's clothes were a deep teal color. I didn't know whether to stand, sit, go full spread on the bed, or assume some other position. He'd been strangely silent on that point. Bit solved the problem by sitting on the bed, motioning me beside him. Then the lesson in Delmorph's sexual practices began. It seemed all those strange bumps on his torso and thighs were to be stimulated. I must say he took his time to stimulate certain zones of my body. When it was over, some 2 hours later, darkness had dispelled gray sunlight, and I had experienced sheer ecstasy for the first time in my 25 or so years. I tingled in places I didn't know I had. The next day, courtiers, salon specialists, and tutors arrived. I was transformed into a classy, refined Delmorph. Everywhere I turned, luxury abounded. Before we relocated to Delmorph, we spent 2 weeks touring places on my planet that I didn't know existed. On Delmorph, it was tutor after tutor. At last, a different type of tutor appeared. Now you learn about finances and whatever area it takes to make you a contributor to the Von Murg holdings. Bit would disappear during the day as he caught up on financial work and changes. During the evening, he insisted we be together every moment. Why? It's necessary for proper bonding. Silly me, I thought we had. It was more than evenings that we spent together. Any free time, we would visit other businesses, study together, shop together, and we always, always slept together, whether we had sex or not. After 5 years of this regime, I felt it would be heaven to go shopping alone or find someone else to join me for lunch. I missed the intimate talk with friends of my own sex. I tried to take advantage of his mood after one particularly satisfying bout of sex. We had risen from the bed, but I was still tingling, and we were both coated with a light film of sweat. Bit, why don't we find divergent interest for an hour or so every day? It might enliven our other experiences. No, that cannot be. Aren't you tired of seeing me almost every waking hour of the day? That doesn't enter into it, my dear. We must become one and all to each other. Is that why you haven't introduced me to your family? I'd seen a man he called his brother on the vision screen, but never in person. He, like Bit, only discussed finances. Neither did they look alike, except for the lumpy body. Didn't you notice that the ancient earthen ceremony said it best? Leave your parents and cleave to one another. Man and woman shall become one flesh. My other mates appreciated this in the end. You've been bonded before? How would I not know? Of course. You're separated? Oh no, my dear. Delmorphs live an incredible number of years by rejuvenating ourselves with contracts of alliance. The extra time allows us as a family to grow and amass fortunes. This was puzzling, as I had seen very few children. How many partners have you had? 10 or 12. I would need to recapitulate all their names. Were there any children? No, there won't be unless I marry a Delmorph. But that is not likely. You may have noticed that Delmorph couples tend to age normally. Did all your other bonders die of old age? My contract strictly lined out my remuneration should separation occur or abandonment in old age. Not really, my dear. We became one flesh. They are all alive in me. Someday we will be one flesh. That is why you must learn every aspect of my business. How long does this take? This conversation was beginning to make me uneasy. It varies, but anywhere from 5 to 15 years, he smiled. Are you saying that when we merge into one flesh, we will truly be one as we vowed? He swept me into his arms. You're so clever, my dear. For the first time since we pledged allegiance, I fought to free myself. Merging didn't sound pleasant. Bit was stronger than I anticipated. He caught my arms and held them against my back and locked his mouth on mine. I tried twisting my body, but he put his thighs against the outside of my thighs and started squeezing. Those strange bumps that had been part of our sexual encounters latched onto my flesh like suckers, drawing me into his body mass, and the darkness descended. I wanted to scream, but my mouth wouldn't open, and air wasn't coming into my lungs. Yet I lived. I had sensations, and they were wrong. I need air. I need to see. I need to live. A voice seemed to speak in my mind. Don't fight me. We will be one. One Delmorph. Another silent voice broke into his. Envision bringing your arms across your chest in turn. took every ounce of my remaining strength and mind, but I managed to feel the sensation of my arms moving against flesh and vein while I twisted my body in a slow revolution. Two voices in my senses were shouting, "No!" One voice was mine, and one was Bits. That shadowy whisper seemed to grow in desperation. "Now thrust your arms outward." I tried to achieve what was commanded. For a moment, there was no sensation. Blackness and pain were blotting out my core, my sense of self. It felt like my scalp was being torn from my head. No, my own being was screaming. I am alive. I need to see. I want to flex my fingers. I want texture. I want life. My fingers tingled and moved. My eyes blinked and the room was a blurry mass. The other voice yelling, "No," was retreating. My breath was ragged and I heard my voice, deeper as if I had a cold. But my voice saying, "I am alive. I am Nadja. I am I." I blinked again, and there was the room. It looked the same. I looked downward at my body. My boobs had shrunk, and those strange lumps were on me. Something was tickling my chest, and I staggered into the bathroom, feeling the need to vomit, and that faint voice whispering, "Cut it off. Cut it off." One look in the mirror stopped my stumbling steps. The tickling came from the mass hanging from my protruding lips and jawline. It was my hair, gloriously glossy black, cascading down my chest. It was mine. That Delmorph had not swallowed me whole. I was here, physically. The faint voice was chanting, "Cut it off! Shave it! Be a Delmorph!" Fat chance. That was me. Bit couldn't have. Not my core. The beard remained. It does not matter how long I live or do not live. The balance in Bit's account is enough to sustain me in luxury for 9 Atlantis lifespans. My black beard is truly luxuriant. One's Moon by Zara Khand, read by the author, with music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver.
One's Moon. She smiled as turquoise jewels glistened in her eyes. Hovering across from her was her moon, gazing down in all its amorous radiance. "The wind is picking up," she shuddered. Strands of hair waved in the soft glow. "Come, let's go to bed. I'll keep you warm," crooned the moon. She gathered her quilt and smoothed it over the flat boulder whereupon they slept each night. Before climbing up on it, she walked over to their little water fountain and knelt beside it. "Can we, before we call it a night?" she chirped out into the silent desert air. Grinning, the moon hovered slightly over and placed its face so that its reflection perfectly haloed that of hers. It was a favorite game of theirs, merging their faces into one glistening sphere upon the water's surface, a playful symbol of their unity. They reveled in this for a moment, and then she felt the warm arms of light luring her onto their rock bed. "All right, you," she chuckled. "This is really our favorite part of night." She curled up onto it. "That it is." The moon watched as she unraveled her simple gown, exposing soft, bare skin. Once she had lain down comfortably on her side, it leaned in and caressed her shoulder, hips, legs with its fervent turquoise hue until her whole body became illuminated. She let out a soft moan, felt as if she were melting into the sky and ground, and that no boundaries existed between them. "I love you. I couldn't be any happier than I am right here with you." "Me too." She felt the first wave of half-dreams pass over her, but before fully claimed, she caught sight of the metallic sparkles off in the distant landscape, dancing fuzzily through the slivers of her eyes. She sighed and fell into deep sleep. The moon hovered calmly, gazing intently over her as usual. "My tender young companion," it thought, "I must remain protective over her. The world can be such an insidious place. Still, in all her naivety, she inspires in me faith that this earthly world harbors much beauty." It too suddenly caught sight of the glimmer of those shiny, unnatural-looking objects in the distance and grimaced in disdain. "We have our own paradise here. No need to be burdened by all that crawls out there." She awoke, feeling delicious in the morning sun. Her companion had returned to its dim, distant nook in the daytime sky, as it was obliged to until each nightfall, but its sultry, internal light still lingered within her. She looked upward towards its direction and blew a kiss, and in turn she could see a tiny blink of light beacon back at her. She lowered herself from the rock and began her normal routine of tidying up the parameters of their dwelling. Restoring all its arrangements each morning after the wind's toil was quite a task, yet also something to pass the time until her moon's return. Simple and satisfying was their home. A few logs for sitting, a fire pit for cooking, a fountain for washing, and a flat rock for sleeping. "So many joyous nights have been had here," she thought. In-depth conversations about life, songs sung, stargazing, light-making, fantastic dreaming. After sweeping away layers of dust, she noticed some of her garments had blown out past some nearby rocks and clung to a few scraggly juniper trees. As she went to retrieve the garments, she again noticed those unnatural twinkles off in the distance, curiosity rousing her slightly. Instantly, she clutched at the vial that hung from her neck. It was a special gift from her companion. Inside shined a concentrated amount of the moon's very own essence, a symbol of sacrifice and of its loving presence, even when afar. It had warned her about such foreign objects which appeared real and inviting, yet whose only intent is to stray one from their natural path. If over there exist things that are irrelevant to real life, then it should be of no consequence that I simply go as an observer. I'm mature enough to make my own mind up about such matters, she thought. In one impulsive instant, she resolved to set foot upon territory which she had vowed so many times never to do. Her first timid steps forward gradually accelerated into an eager stride, while her vial necklace delicately dangled from her chest. She passed through familiar trails and various rock formations, occasionally looking behind her shoulder at their humble dwelling, becoming smaller and smaller until it was but a speck in the desert haze. Suddenly, she reached a part of the land in which there was a noticeable shift in the ground, its texture softer and of a reddish color. She had made it to the outskirts of her familiar territory. And there, about 4 feet before her, sat one of those shiny metallic objects which had aroused her curiosity so and led her to this foreign place. It was a 2-inch trapezoid, which at first appeared static. As though sensing her attention, it suddenly sprung into an insect-like configuration. Spiny legs shot outward and a beaded head emerged. Suddenly, she took a step back, to which it reciprocated a bashful stance and they stood gazing at one another. Its shiny eyes were captivating, and she then felt herself drawn closer. It began making endearing, theatrical motions with its legs, as if for her benefit, and she smiled and put out her hand. It leapt up and caressed her palm. As soon as it sensed relaxation from her, the creature once again reconfigured itself into the flat trapezoid that it had been previously. However, rather than refract the sun's light as any solid object, it seemed to display a sort of inward screen, as if a window into another realm. She lost all sense of her surroundings and stared into this cloudy, tiny window. She saw flashes of villages, parades being held, cheering crowds gathered around what seemed persons of nobility. The window zoomed in to make out the detail of what was the center of interest, which in each scene appeared to be a single female, adorned with satiny robe and seductive jewels. flamboyant headpiece made of phosphorescent, alternating colors. Bystanders were clearly ravished by the presence of each one of these goddesses, who in turn devoured their adoration, flashing an impersonal wink or smile occasionally. They look so elegant, so superior, she thought. For the first time in her life, she felt a tinge of envy, made aware of her humble getup and beginning to feel as though it no longer sufficed. This sudden sensation of hers served as the object's definitive cue. It instantaneously jumped from her hand and dug itself into her cloth gown. Mouth agape, she peered down at the object attached to her navel. It was now reconfigured into an oval shape, similar to that of the jewels worn by the admired, only larger. It was a beautiful addition to her getup, she couldn't deny. She did a twirl in the breeze, admiring her new adornment. She felt hungry for more, wanted more beauty. It so happened that every few feet popped up more metallic objects, offering themselves to her by way of the same ceremony, alluring her with windows into other tantalizing realms, and then attaching themselves to her gown. While this activity ensued, the moon watched from above with disappointment. Doesn't she know how beautiful she is, internally radiant, without needing the external help of these little devious creatures? With each new oval jewel, she grew heavier, but her vanity high made her feel light as a feather. So absorbed was she in her new additions that she didn't notice the several times her beloved moon had twinkled light in her direction. She began imagining herself applauded by large, covetous crowds, carried away to distant lands where monuments boasted her form and servants bled for her. She came upon a little oasis in which a clear glaze of water beckoned her forth. Her growing thirst in the desert heat overlooked, she instead found herself captivated by the exquisite reflection staring back at her. Flaunting smiles and angling the jewels so that they sparkled at the water's surface, it began to bubble. Gradually, the water rose to her eye level and split into two liquid bodies. They were both nearly identical, dashing female forms, and very familiar to her. "Who are you two?" she asked in amazement. They laughed mischievously. "You could say that we are your sisters, in one way or another." They began dancing seductively and pulled her into their circular vortex. Laughter, hair, and beads of water flung about in spiraling frenzy. Under the delirium, she was aware of losing herself completely to these dazzling forms, and she surrendered carelessly. They swirled her about, their eyes hungry upon her. "Give me your jewels," said one. "I am not beautiful enough." Without hesitation, she twisted the oval jewels from her gown and flung them into the belly of the water being. "Now I have almost enough to be loved." The other water body came to embrace her, demanding, "Give me your vial. I am so beautiful that I deserve to be loved by all." The being shined an irresistible smile into her. Overtaken, she untied the vial necklace and handed it over without further thought. Far off in the distant sky, a speck of light showed a degree dimmer. "You have nothing further to offer us," came a cold chorus. And with this, their forms descended as a spiraling mass back into the flat of the water's surface, without a trace. All the exciting commotion ended so abruptly, as if she had just woken from a disturbing dream. Breathless and nearly paralyzed, she collapsed to the ground. She felt hollow, and as if something terrible had just happened. There in the late evening sun, she fell asleep hard at the water's edge. The scent of her tired, tender skin carried into the air and roused the attention of the nearby desert vermin, awakening from their unsuspected nests. They crept out, found her lying there, and one by one planted little teeth marks into her pale, limp body. She awoke to the setting sun, and its accompanying brilliant red smeared across the horizon in violent patches. She shook her head in disorientation. The previous day's events came flooding back to her. "My vial!" She reached at her vacant chest with dread, also noticing pangs of pain shooting throughout her body. She looked down at dozens of oozing red holes, to which slender trails of blood snaked down her limbs and into the water, where it dissipated into a murky red reflection. She began to cry. In this combination of water, blood, and tears, she stared at her face. The sun reclined into the hills, and the smears of red were replaced with a tranquil blue-black sky. And, like a graceful phantom across this blue-black reflection, came gliding in a brilliant, milky turquoise sphere and landed in place behind her face, creating a soft halo. "You fool of mine," said the moon endearingly. "Don't you know that I live for you, revolve just to see you smile each day?" "I know," she managed to smile between weeping. "I have given something sacred away. I believe I have some work to do, to give back what was lost. Come, let us take rest upon our rock bed. I will shine onto you all the light I have, the kind that can't be taken away." They returned to their humble dwelling, within which all the true riches in the world are sought.
In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard One Flesh by Mary Collier, read by Jean-Paul Garnier, music by Loopool. One's Moon by Zara Kand, read by the author, with music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Be sure to visit us at spacecowboybooks.com.